Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. The Limark Technical Net has been going strong for more than 44 years. Every Sunday night, we sit in front of our radios and educate each other, inform each other, learn from each other, and hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you for joining me again this Sunday night to do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. As always, if you want to reach me via email, that would be for mailbag questions. Those are questions that you couldn't ask on the technical net because you were out of radio range. And you can ask them, and if they're interesting, we'll entertain them and discuss them. And you can either listen to them on the internet audio stream that we provide or the archive records of the technical net. Or if you have a topic in the news that you're well aware of and would like to share your expertise, you can volunteer your services. We've had that happen more than a few times, and it's very educational and entertaining. Or if you have a TechNet puzzle to offer me, I'm always looking for TechNet puzzles. They're as rare as hen's teeth. And so if you have something that you think would puzzle the general amateur radio operator on this technical net, but that isn't able to be very rapidly Googled the answer, then please share it with me, and if I can figure a way of presenting it, I will try. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to talk about something that you saw space or NASA related. Of course, you can directly email him. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But if you need to email me, you can reach me via mailbag@ac2gs.com. We also have, every single week, I cut and paste a whole bunch of interesting articles, YouTubes, what have you, onto a link page. You can reach it by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. And that's open, operational 24/7, so any old time, when you have nothing better to do, you can kind of review some interesting articles, or at least what I thought were interesting articles. We have a chat room available. It's been quiet the last month or so, but you can get to it by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, we offer an internet audio stream of the technical net. We leave it on the rest of the week, so you can listen to the Glen Oaks traffic. If you want to listen to the stream, you just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you the audio stream. And I always like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Limark Technical Net going as far back as September of 2006. It has over a million visitors. Make it a million and one. It's a very interesting place. So that's the usual link. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you our plans for today, tonight. Well, we have the usual plan. We will ask people for questions of a technical nature, questions or comments or topics for discussion. I would prefer if the first few are amateur radio related, because this is an amateur radio net. But as you all know by now, we will listen and try to do our best with any question of a scientific or technical nature. That should take us to approximately 10:15 when Paul will join us for the SpaceNet report. And that should take us into about 11 o'clock. I will return, tie a little bow on things, and wish you well for the week. So if everything in my shack continues to work and the internet continues to work, and all kinds of things on the repeater end continue to work, that's my plan for tonight. So with that all in mind, let me drop and ask if anyone has any questions for tonight's technical net.
W2BZ, non-ham radio related.
Rich recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Josh, We're starting a little slow tonight, but hopefully as time progresses, more people will come up with questions or comments. So let's start it off with Rich. What's your comment or your question for tonight?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody who's listening. OpenAI made a huge announcement this week. They came up with another version of their AI engine called ChatGPT 4.0. And it's supposed to be incredibly better than ChatGPT 3.5 or 4.0 was, but I don't know really what it adds to the game. It seems like, it doesn't seem like, it's absolutely true that whatever I read, whatever newspaper, magazine, wherever I go, there's something about AI in everything. It's exploded like I haven't seen. I'm 75 years old, and I've been in technology since I was 10 years old. So in 65 years, I haven't seen an explosion like this. Even when the Internet first started, it came on slowly. This started, you know, with a few little hints about it, and then exploded where it's all over the place now. Anyway, do you or does anybody else know what this ChatGPT 4.0 is about?
Okay, that's a good thing to bring up. I was going to bring up that as well early on in my little pre-segment where I bring up artificial intelligence. Again, we've had this discussion. AI has been, it's kind of like overnight sensation. You find out the person who's famous has been attempting to become a star for 20 years, and people just finally noticed, and it took off. AI has been around for more than 20 years. Generative AI was originally based in some research documents from Google that kind of dropped the ball and let OpenAI kind of move into the generative AI big name place. So it's been growing too, and you know it reaches a certain critical size, and then it kind of oscillates back and forth on each other. And I would still think that at least 75% of all this is hype. There's a lot of people who are putting AI into everything and not getting much out of it. I saw a YouTube the other day where someone was using a ChatGPT to do pseudo Google searches and found out that they were using the same resources that Google was using, which was a bunch of farms that companies pay to promote their products and such. So as far as I'm aware, ChatGPT 4.0, not 4.0, but 4.0, is just a little bit of a tweak to ChatGPT 4. It's a bit more conversational, but I don't think it has more connections, more parameters. One of the most important factors of generative artificial intelligence is the number of parameters. I think some of the more massive models have 40 billion bytes of information in their parameters or something incredibly large like that. So it's not a kind of a revolutionary change. It's more of tweaking the 4.0 models, as far as I'm aware. And there's a bunch of YouTubes that you could go to where guys kind of try it out, and some of them are a little bit impressed and some of them aren't, you know, like most things. But I think this is more of a case of OpenAI didn't have anything really big to announce, so they announced 4.0. Could be wrong, but, the same players are working on their models. Google is working on a model. Facebook is working on their model. And, you know, who knows whether there will be a decisive winner in this. It might be a little bit of everything. There's a lot of rumors around that the next version of Apple iPad OS is going to incorporate artificial intelligence. The latest rumor is that they're trying to make a deal with OpenAI to have a ChatGPT type of interface. There have been other rumored AI companies in the running as well. I'm interested if anyone has any other insight into the newly announced ChatGPT 4.
Well, I know the O stands for Omni, so they want to get into all media, video, and just straight artistic rendering, audio, and I forget what the fourth one was. But I saw a demonstration where they said, paint me a picture of a seashore with little boats in the water and blah, 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 and the thing just did it. It was pretty amazing. But these are all like all the demonstrations are like toys. You know, who cares about whether it could paint a picture with little boats on a seashore? That's like, in 10 years they'll laugh at that as a wow factor, you know, in 2024. But I try to show me, not list, but show me ways to exhibit photographs cheaply. And it came up with about three different ways, interesting but not revolutionary. But I lost my train of thought a second on what I wanted to say about they're killing websites, because if they're scraping website information to come up with the answers that you ask it, you no longer have to go to the website. So websites are shaking in their boots about this, and there are all sorts of copyright infringement lawsuits that are going to come down the pike. But I read an article where websites are going to be obsolete soon.
See, but the problem is that's very self-destructive, because they're basing their information on scraping websites, which is copyright violation, by the way, and lawyers will make a mint. I don't know if the websites will make a mint, but certainly lawyers will be making mint. So send your kids to law school. Artificial intelligence is the greatest thing to ever happen to professional lawyers in 100 years. But that's the self-fulfilling prophecy of doom. If you kill the websites by stealing their information and starving them of profits and driving them away, there'll be no new information. So when you're asking for reviews about new products, all those web guys are not going to be writing anything, because they know that in a week or two they're not going to be making any money off of it. So you're killing the golden calf. So, see, that's the fly in the ointment, if you ask me personally.
Comment?
Yes, John.
Yeah, KC2SHO, you're a good segue into something that I keep coming around to every time I think about this subject, and that is, isn't there some point of stagnation? Granted, I don't think people will ever stop creating or publishing or doing what they do, but with AI, let's pretend that for a minute that AI completely took over, people all fell into the background, and again, that's a bit pretend. I don't think that would be what really happened. But wouldn't it stagnate? It would have no new input eventually, and not be able to come up with novel things. Although I don't believe anything it's coming up with is really novel, maybe either. So I don't know. Maybe it's a two-part question. Is what it's coming up with really novel, since it's using existing things to make its new, quote-unquote, new things? And wouldn't it become stagnant, although there is a really large base of existing information? I don't know. I've just been chewing on this for months, if not a year. AC2GSKC2SHO.
Okay, very good. It is AC2GS. Yeah, to a degree, the problem is that generative artificial intelligence can only give you back what it's been trained on. So if something new comes up that it hasn't been trained on, it doesn't know that it exists. It can't explain it. It can't even deal with it. So, yeah, it's inherently stagnant. It is not creative. Artificial intelligence, generative artificial intelligence technologies we have today is completely copycat. It's based on its training material. And as you steal from people generating that material, you basically kill the thing. So it'll know everything up until when websites disappear because they can't monetize anything. So you have it frozen in time, and it can't really make any comments about anything beyond its training period. What's possibly even worse is that people have noticed that it's starting to scrape AI-generated garbage from the website. So it's kind of a negative feedback mechanism, where because very few places label their stuff as AI, they perceive it as trainable material. And so rather than train on human beings 100%, some percentage is being trained on the same problematic artificial intelligence. And the feedback loop is kind of like taking a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox. Also, artificial intelligence does suffer occasionally from delusions, where it just goes off and makes stuff up out of nowhere. So there's a lot of problems with the present state of the technology. And, you know, you never know what future AI models will give us. But right now, we just have a clever toy to play with. And I wouldn't trust answers it gives you, because I tried a physics question on ChatGPT this week, and it got it abysmally wrong.
You're real good, Roy. Yeah, I've heard similar stories of, you know, really giving it a test. Sometimes it comes up with interesting things, but in many very deep science scenarios, it does not, or maybe it doesn't even have to be that deep. Anyway, thank you for the comments. Back to
NetGC2SHO. Wow, you're welcome, John. What I did was not that difficult. I asked if electrons are dimensionless charged fundamental particles. If you ask ChatGPT, it will tell you no. If you ask Google, which just kind of scrapes websites, it gives you actually the right answer. Now, that doesn't mean that you could depend upon Google to give you the right answer. For my TechNet puzzles, I regularly found puzzles that Google would answer incorrectly. But, I mean, it's you can't rely on it. It's an interesting toy, and it's a way for not-so-great people can cheat on, you know, writing notes or letters or something. Occasionally, I've mentioned it before, I'll mention it again, good old Michael Cohen, the guy who used to be a lawyer but isn't anymore, used ChatGPT apparently to cite legal arguments that didn't exist, because the way he asked the question, ChatGPT deluded itself and made up court cases that didn't exist. So, I warn everyone, if you want to be amused, on a conversational level, play with ChatGPT, but you know, don't ask it to do your taxes. Don't ask it to do your legal briefs, because nothing good will come of that.
websites are going to lose a lot of money is if you put in you know, the question, what are the top 10 ranked audiophile turntables? If you put that into Google, you're going to get a whole bunch of sites that come up that you can click on. And then if you read the reviews, and they always have, you know, at Amazon, $360, at somewhere else, at Best Buy, and you click on that, they actually get a percentage of the sale. But if you ask that question to ChatGPT or to Gemini, you may come up with a list of them, but there's just going to be a list of them. There are going to be no ways to click and take a look at the turntable on Amazon or any other website. So you'll get a list, but all those websites that make money from click-throughs are now not going to make the money anymore.
Well, again, it's a case of poisoning the source, but, I mean, the source is kind of already poisoned. What I would like to get when I type into Google, you know, what's the best turntable, is to have a bunch of websites that have done reviews that don't make any money if you go for their recommendation. So they are somewhat unbiased. If all of these places are hawking things and going to make a profit off of it, and, you know, there are some products that they could make a profit off of, and there are some products that aren't on Amazon, I think that unfortunately biases a lot of these sites in giving you incorrect information. I just saw a YouTube today where a guy who has a website dedicated to mechanical keyboards typed into Google, what's the best mechanical keyboard, and he got a bunch of very well-known branded models that were crap. And I think that's an ongoing problem. If you Google, is Google getting worse, you will find thousands of entries on that subject. So the source of these AIs are already polluted. And so I think their output is going to even make it more polluted. So it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse if it all survives. And there's going to have to be some mutual agreement that if they're scraping sources, they have to pay the guy something to make it worth their time to generate the sources. You know, otherwise, they'll all go into dust. And, again, it'll just be an AI talking to itself.
I read an article about, Roy, have you heard of Deviant or DeviantArt?
Not exactly. Debian is a flavor of Linux. Other than that, I'm not aware. Would you like to expand?
Well, I don't know it, but apparently there's been a website called DeviantArt out for a long, long time, where artists and photographers, illustrators listed their artwork, and then it was like a community type of thing. Well, I read this article where some very highly sophisticated, have nothing to do with ChatGPT or Gemini, but some heavy, very sophisticated AI bots went on DeviantArt and captured some of the art that was on there, and then came up with AI variations of it, and then sold it on DeviantArt, and it's taking money away from the artists, the original artists on DeviantArt, and it sort of ruined DeviantArt. I'm going to look more into it, but there's a lot of nasty stuff coming down the pike with this. A lot of nasty stuff, especially in the art field. because it's so easy to modify a painting and then sell it as a new creation that it's only begun to rip off artists and photographers and the like.
Okay, I think what you're talking about is deviant art, not deviant art, deviant art. And deviant art has been around for a long, long time, and long before generative AI stole from it, NFT guys stole from it. If you went to those places that bought and sold NFTs and you did a Google image search, you could trace back thousands upon thousands of images stolen from DeviantArt and used to create NFTs and try and make a profit off of them. So it predates even generative AI. Although, you know, I mean, the nature of DeviantArt is that it's open and available and a simple right-click to copy and paste it into your files. And then you could do with it as you want, sort of thing. So it's kind of a problematic medium. Working in digital images, you might be able to stamp them in an invisible way and trace them, but there's always ways of screwing around with that and losing the mechanism that says I made this at such and such a time in such and such a place and you can't steal it from me type of thing. So this is old news. DeviantArt has yelled and screamed about NFTs years ago.
Yeah, well, I think according to this article, it's quite elementary compared to what these bots can do by scraping DeviantArt. Anyway, it's sort of discouraging, but there'll be a lot of positive things that come out of generative AI and large language models. It won't be all negative. Some negativity, and I guess the artistic community has to somehow come to grips with it. I have a couple of websites that have my photography on it, and one of them is about the photographs I took of John Lennon. And what I did with those photographs, so as not to be copyable, I put this layer on top of it of 1,000 little dots. The problem is, and this has been a problem for a long time for photographers, the more you distract from the image, the lesser the image is going to seem in the eye of the beholder. You know, but I decided that nobody is going to copy this stuff. I don't even care how degraded the images are. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's just going to grow, and whether it's hype or not, it's coming on strong. Anyway, thanks, Troy. That's about it. W2BZ, back to net.
AC2TS, well, thank you, Rich. Yeah, once again, it's like anything else. It's a tool of at this point somewhat limited value, but of value. Hammer, you could build a house with a hammer, or you could bash your neighbor's skull in with a hammer. So there will be people who will use it for evil purposes. There's a lot of interesting evil things you can do with it, and people are going to try every permutation they can possibly think of. You know, even the laziest criminal can spend a lot of time and effort if it means breaking laws, I've seen. So it's going to introduce a lot of problems. It hopefully will introduce some solutions. It's a mixed bag. I think the percentage of hype is higher now than it really should be. I think it's kind of vaguely similar to the old NFT crypto key. hype, but I think it permeated far deeper and across more generations than crypto and NFTs did. But, you know, there are inevitably going to be AI engine companies that fail because you don't really need 25 different AI engines. So, you know, the ones that somehow demonstrate their ability much farther than others will succeed and profit by it, and a lot of other people who've invested billions of dollars in the other companies won't. And nature of technology, it's a disruptive technology that has possibilities for the future. Unfortunately, the short-term future that I see benefiting is the law profession. There's going to be a lot of copyright suits and a lot of new copyright laws being written by legislators who don't have the faintest idea about how any of this really works, but hopefully they'll be guided by people who are more aware of what's going on. So I think artificial intelligence is a fascinating subject. I keep an ear to the ground on it, and if really new and interesting stuff, I don't think the 4.0, you know, I mean, other companies have kind of demonstrated, and even OpenAI has demonstrated different ways of using a generative AI model to do different things. I live in fear that, you know, as bad as the music industry is right now, it is only going to get worse if we let generative AI write the music for us. But we'll see. You never know. Anyway, that's my 2 cents on generative AI for tonight. No doubt we will be discussing it again in future episodes of the Limark Technical Net. So once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be the Limark Technical Net. And if anyone would like to offer up either a topic for discussion or a question to be answered, or, you know, make some comment based upon other things that have gone on an earlier technical net, please hit that push to talk and give us your call sign and your name.
KC2SHO.
Yes, John. Was there someone else other than John?
Pause for a second.
Yeah, you have a kind of a weak signal tonight, Wes.
Very strange.
How about now?
It's very weak. You're going at around 6 dB audio lower than I usually hear you.
How about you guys speaking louder?
When you said the word louder, it was louder. So that was good.
Okay, good. Speak louder. It's going to be worse. I'm going to put... Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, generally your audio is lower and there's an intermittent hum that is coming across that's a much higher amplitude than your audio.
Yeah, I mean, not micro, but it's a voice processor. Voice processor. Is it any better?
Yes, that's much better. It's still not kind of booming like it usually is, but it's much better than earlier today. Tonight.
Okay, thank you very much. So, I'm going to be next.
Okay, Wes, you're after John. John, what's your topic, comment, question, what have you tonight?
Yeah, Roy, mine might be closer related to the space line if you want to wait, but I'm happy to say it at any time and I'll start that conversation.
Well, I mean, it's up to you how you want to do it.
Oh, we can do it now. now because I'm about to start cooking dinner, so maybe it's a better time to at least start the conversation, and if Paul's around, maybe he'll have comments. But the subject came up with a friend of mine because I was joking about a thing I've seen online, and that's whenever people talk about converting over to the metric system, some Yahoo has a comment like, well, you know, we didn't get to the moon using the metric system, and you go, oh, great, yes, the measurement technology really is what drove us to the moon and back. But it did start a conversation, was how much metric do you think would have been involved in the American, project to get to the moon? I imagine a lot of, my comment to him was that I imagine a lot of the core science, maybe some things, you know, calculating trajectories and gravity, maybe could have even been done using metrics, since a lot of the scientific formulas have that. But I guess he said, well, maybe not, because we would have been too proud to do that. So I don't know. What's the real answer? How much metric was used to get us to the moon? So I can argue with these Yahoos on online. Just kidding. I don't really care about them.
Okay. That's an interesting question. My gut feeling, not really knowing specifics, is that a heck of a lot of it took place on the metric side. In point of fact, if you really think about the inch is really defined by the metric system. If you look up the national standards, you will see that the definition of an inch is 2.54 centimeters. So they're all ultimately going back to the metric system, but especially in engineering and physics, people talk about joules, they talk about watts, they talk about all kinds of things that are inherently metric, not weird, English standards of foot and inches and tons and such. So I would be surprised. The only place that I guess and assume that inches and such are used in space-related is the building of machinery, where thread sizes and other such things probably use the American standard measurements. But I'm sure if you go into the back room of the engineers, they're all metricking.
WP2EAV.
Yes, Ed.
From one standpoint, that game has been over since 1980. If you go to do some work on your car, you better have metric sockets. They are 100% metric since 1980. On the other hand, these are not that simple. A lot of scientists will use metric down to a millimeter, then they change to thousandths of an inch. So there's a tremendous amount of overlap. If you look at the specification sheet for an airplane, you will see the length is in meters, the wingspan is in meters, the fuel capacity is in pounds, and the altitude numbers are in feet. So it's a huge mishmash, but it is slowly going over to all metric.
Well, it'll be interesting to see at what point they do away with talking about American metrics. You know, if it makes anyone feel better, to a degree, similar things, to a lesser degree, are taking place in the United Kingdom. If you ever talk to people in England and such, every so often they'll talk to you about inches and feet and stuff. So even though that we consider them firmly metric, they have a little fuzziness as well. You know, unfortunately, when people who want to insult the United States, they say there's only two countries that aren't on the metric system, the United States and some little tiny, itsy-bitsy third world country. So there are other countries that are kind of in the midst of transitioning I think it's going to take a long time to kind of put an end to inches and feet. I think those are going to be the last things to sort of go. But I think the trend is inevitable. You know, it's the rest of the world against us. So, and science and technology very often just starts up. You know, if you talk to a regular physicist, they basically operate in the metric ranges. Engineers kind of balance themselves on both ends, but you know, theoretical physicists and such, they're pretty much all metric that I can think of.
Quiz, what hand band are we talking on?
Last I checked, it was 2 meters. Theoretically, I'm talking on an internet protocol.
Understand your point, but my point is, that ship has sailed for ham radio bands decades and decades and decades ago.
Yeah. Again, I think it's because of its origins being firmly placed in the field of physics. So, you know, when push came to shove, you might measure feet, but you describe them as meters. So again, as long as you kind of stay in the non-engineering field of aspects of physics, I think it's 99.9% metrics these days. And it has been probably for more than a century.
Got another one for you. You correct your artillery in clicks.
Okay, yeah, I think you'll find an amalgamation in American society where just people use different things in different, some in metric, some in non-metric. And if you kind of trace it all the way back, it's sort of because, you know, someone kind of said eeny, meeny, miny, mo and made that decision way back when, and tradition kind of locks everything in. So that's a good thing in some ways. It's a bad thing in some ways because, you know, some things are locked into inches and feet and such. And threads. I wish we could all kind of agree on metric threads. It would make my life easier. I wouldn't need to have two sets of tools. You know, one for the metric and one for the American. But I still there's enough differing things that are engineered that require differing units. So I'm stuck with double sets of tools.
No, Roy, did you catch my comment about clicks?
Yes, a click is kilometer, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we use kilometers for a lot of different things. Again, it depends on what particular area you're talking about. People just kind of decide on places where metric will be used, and no one argues with them. And where metric won't be used, and almost no one argues with them.
KD.
That's the one.
I got it. KD. This is Dan Kilo Delta 2 Sierra Papa Victor.
Paul recognized. What can I do for you, Dan?
This is Dan. I have a question regarding Echolink. I have it both on my computer and I have it on my telephone. But I know a lot of people that have it on their telephone, but their numbers don't appear on the computer. Do they have to register both?
Dan, let me, because we're coming to, hopefully, close to an end to John's question. Can I hold off on you for just a couple of minutes so that we can tie down John and his question, and then we'll go to you. How's that?
Problem, hold off.
Okay, Paul, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I was talking about the measurements. The Apollo system, when they built all of that with Saturn, there were foreign countries involved, so it was on an international level. Of course, they were all on metric. But there was this, you know, the SI system, the International
system, or SI, which is, comes from the French. But the SI system is worldwide, and they had to deal in both metric and American to do what they had to do. And you think their competition, of course, was the Soviet Union at the time, and they were all metric. So, and of course we evolved as time went on. We got involved with the Russians, with the Soyuz, Apollo, when they met up in 1975. And, they all had to get along. So I would say the SI is most important, with second for time, meters for length, and kilograms for mass, and amperes, on and on. That was the predominant method, using that. Thrust and everything was, of course, in pounds. Nowadays, they're talking about newtons. A lot of rocket engines that are coming out, they describe them in force. So, it's all changed. Back then it was all pounds. How many pounds of thrust? 7.5 million pounds of thrust for the Saturn V. Anyway, back to you. I just want to make a comment about the SI system. Back to you, Ron.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Paul. But I'm sure there was a lot of SI being used in NASA even during the 60s, when you had to explain it to the population or to Congress, then they would use pounds because the average American would kind of be upset if you started to talk about newtons. But I'm willing to bet you anything those guys back in the lab were throwing newtons back and forth and just doing a conversion for the lovely brochures and for the presentations and such.
Yeah, anytime they talk to the news media, they really had to get away from the metrics. Yeah, back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I think it's chauvinistic to think that a unit of measurement makes or breaks. It's just easier to remember things that are divisible by 10 rather than things that are divisible by 2s and 4s and 12s and 144s and all kinds of wonderful things that, cups versus quarts versus pints versus all this nonsense. So, I am bilingual. I can operate on both units, but this chauvinism sometimes is remarkable. Anyway, John, thanks for bringing up the subject. I don't know if you're going to change anyone's mind. These are more emotional things than real things. But it certainly is a good question.
Yeah, I guess just his point was that maybe there was some element of national pride to make sure that things were converted back to inches and actually done there. So even if there was international collaboration, perhaps there was still some conversion and things like that. So I'm curious what anyone who's really seen some of that engineering data might say still. But I do appreciate all the comments, and it's a good conversation. I think it could even go a little further, but I'll let you get on with the net, and I'm starting to cook dinner here. We're 2 hours behind you guys, so just getting to that time of day. I'm going to keep listening. Thanks for the net. EC2GS from KC2SHO.
Okay, very good. I appreciate your participation. I look forward to it in the future. I hope you enjoy your dinner. It's past dinner time for us folk on the East Coast for the most part. By the way, John is, and I mentioned John KD2BD, he hangs out in the chat room because he's a little bit too far away to capture the repeater. He typed in, Wes has a bad microphone connection, which is the second mic that has a bad connection, because we had that problem a couple of years ago with Wesley, his mic kind of just dropping out, so... Well, hopefully he's solved that problem. Let me get back to Dan. I believe it's KD2SPV. You were talking about EchoLink, and you have it on two devices. I have it on a bunch of devices. There's a little trick, though, with having it on more than one device. The fellows at EchoLink get very upset if you use the same IP address. In other words, if both of your devices are accessing a internet service provider, they're providing a main IP address for both computers or cell phones or what have you. And EchoLink really hates two entries using the same IP address. If you do it too often, they send you nasty emails. But get back to Dan and make sure exactly what your question is, Dan.
The question was that if somebody has EchoLink on their phone and they don't have it on their PC, I can't necessarily find it. Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't make sense. You're not going to on EchoLink. It depends on where you link onto EchoLink. In the old days, if you used EchoLink to get onto W2BL, the EchoLink would give you your ID. Nowadays, they're going through another provider that encodes it in numbers. So in the old days, I would get everyone's call sign on my EchoLink. Now I get 1301, 1302, 1304, 576290, 587730. So that's when we go through All-Star. So if you're going directly to EchoLink, it should show up as you. If you go through something like All-Star, it will mask it with your unique number identifier rather than your call sign.
Thank you for the enlightenment. I will keep the same IP address note in mind, because when I use my computer or my phone on my own Wi-Fi, so I'll be careful about that and maybe figure out a way to do the different IP address. But I appreciate your help. The comments are good, and I thank you very much. This is Dan, KD2SPV. Back to you.
You're welcome, Dan, and I'll give you a solution. There's something called a virtual private network, a VPN. There's free ones that aren't incredibly fast. There are low-cost ones that are reasonably fast, and what they do is they mask your computer and give it an alternative IP address. So even though it's going through your internet service provider, it's going through encrypted, and it goes off to another server, and that server uses its IP address. So that's how I'm able to operate multiple sets of EchoLink using the same ISP provider. So VPN, Victor Papa Network. You just have to Google it. Like I said, if you don't need high-speed VPNs, you can probably find one for free.
This is Dan again. Thank you for the update, and I'll bear that in mind. I've been looking at a VPN, but now I'll look at it a lot closer. Thank you for the knowledge, and I'll get back to you in 73. This is Dan, KD2STV.
Okay, very good, Dan. Thank you for participating. Just want to caution everyone, if you ever watch more than a few YouTubes, inevitably you will see ads for virtual private networks, VPNs. Some of the things that VPNs do are very useful, very good. I use one myself. The advertisements that promote the idea that it gives you a stealth existence where no one can trace you or track you and you're invisible are nonsense, unfortunately. It would be nice if we can't be traced or tracked. But there's cookies and there's all kinds of other ways that servers can keep an eye on us and follow us no matter what virtual private network we use. So if you're watching those ads, you know, treat it like most ads. That, you know, maybe about 30% of what they say is real and true. Anyway, thank you, Dan. Wesley, what you got for us tonight?
Two things. Sent you a few emails before, and one of them was Vane Finder near infrared. Yes, 15. Did you have a chance to get into it?
Yeah, I got the email. By the way, you got that heavy hum is back again. I don't know what's the matter, but it sounds, you know, as John KD2BD kind of said in the chat room, that you have a bad connection. You're picking up a lot of AC hum. Yeah, okay. I mean, people have been futzing around with those things for the longest time. Some veins are close to the surface, and you can visualize them. Others are a little deeper. But you can improve the visualization. I don't know if staff will kind of rely on them 100%, probably for the more difficult patients. You know, some people have veins popping all over the place. And then, unfortunately, you get the occasional intravenous drug user who's kind of blown all of his superficial veins. And, you know, there's very few to pick from. So I'm thinking that tool might be more useful for those particular patients rather than just for the general public.
I see that it might be a problem. Okay. How about now?
Well, up until the time you said, how about now, you were lower amplitude, but there was no hum, and then when you said, how about now, it was breaking up all over the place.
Okay, so I'm going to try. Well, I had a situation when the doctor who had a problem to find my veins, and I don't have obesity at all. And I thought that if he had such a near infrared light a vein finder, it would help him. Back to you.
Well, again, I guess so, but unfortunately, most physicians don't have a lot of experience or modern experience with venipuncture. Most doctors do 95% of their venipuncture when they're in medical students, interns, and residents. Then they get the interns and the residents to do it for them, or the nurse, or the physician's assistant, or you know, the phlebotomist to do it for them. So I don't think it's as much your lack of visible veins as perhaps his lack of recent experience doing phlebotomies. Could be wrong, but again, it's an interesting device, but I think most phlebotomists who kind of do this for a living day in and day out, at least the present bunch, would kind of feel insulted to be given a tool to find veins. They have very good talents in that direction.
The article that I found says that infrared is received and then retransmitted or reflected to the hand, showing the veins, and I wonder how they do his synchronization, so that image on the hand that looks very much attractive is exactly at the place where the veins are.
I don't know the technical aspects of the design. I haven't seen the patents or anything like that. It's just that depending upon pigmentation and adipose material and other factors, again, there are guys there that just kind of, you look at them and it's like a roadmap. You know, you could pick one out of 10 and do it blindfolded. And other people with small, and in the worst cases, are, as I said, the intravenous abusers. They blow out their veins because they use them as injection points of not terribly sterile materials, and they sclerose, scar up, and they're gone, and they have next to no peripheral large enough veins to draw blood and such. But I don't know the particular technology that they use infrared to visualize veins. It's